This Week in Free Energy.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. This is Sterling Allen, your host, and we have on our show with us today Nino DeSanto, who is the CEO of Tectane. They're up in Montreal and actually all over the planet. They have offices, and what they specialize in is basically a net zero fuel solution that includes two components. Number one, a hydrogen or a water injection system into the fuel system so that you get combined with ethanol, you get some really good efficiencies, more power, and cleaner emissions, etc. And on the part two is they have a system whereby they can grow sweet sour gum as the source of the ethanol and other byproducts, and they can therefore produce ethanol very cheaply. And combined, these two technologies will enable us to produce our fuel more inexpensively, much cleaner, and basically all the CO2 that our cars emit will be gobbled up by the sweet sour gum that is grown to produce the fuel. Did I get that pretty close?
Well, you're fairly close. I've got to just make a few adjustments.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show, first of all. Appreciate you coming, joining us today.
My privilege.
So where did I go wrong in my little introduction explanation?
Well, first, let's clarify, I think, the distinction between the sweet sorghum zero net emission. In other words, the United Nations has already accredited that when you grow plants like sweet sorghum, and for the people that are not familiar with sweet sorghum, it's sort of a variety of a mix of sugarcane, bamboo, and sorghum. Now, sorghum has grown in America for years and years. A lot of it in the past has been for animal feed. But the difference between sorghum and sweet sorghum is that sweet sorghum is filled with sucrose. Well, that's why they call it sweet sorghum. And the sucrose, the juice, can be fermented and distilled into ethanol. And when it was examined, ironically, by the president of America, Jimmy Carter, the farmer, way back in 1980 when America experienced the oil embargo, the United States Department of Agriculture did an extensive comparison on which crops were the ideal for a zero net emission. So, for example, when you grow corn or you grow sugarcane or you grow beet and you make fuel, there's what they call a fertilization balance that absorbs the CO2. So that part is a zero net balance. Now, when you burn anything, regardless of what you burn, you create CO2. It's the heat that's creating the CO2. So whether it's gasoline or whether it's ethanol, you're still going to have emissions. But there's a big difference in the amount of emissions that you have between the ethanol and the gasoline. And in our case, what is classified by the United States Department of Agriculture as aquahol. And that's the separate technology of injection of the ethanol and the waters, sort of like two cowboys, or a cowboy with two guns, you might say, instead of one gun. Right now, all the cars in the world and all the manufacturers, regardless of whether it's a BMW or if it's a Pontiac GM car, they've all got one fuel system, so that the engineering benefit to one fuel system is limited, like a cowboy with one gun instead of two. In our case, we've got two fuel systems, one that's got the ethanol and one that's got the water. In other words, there's two fuel tanks. Now, you will still have some emissions, but our emissions are dramatically less than the gasoline and even much more so than the ethanol by itself. Like America is promoting in Brazil the E85 and the 100% ethanol, which is very popular in Brazil. But if you burn 100% ethanol, you still will have some emissions, and it will be very costly. Versus if you burn, as we're doing, some ethanol and then use the water and the hydrogen and the oxygen from the cogeneration of the heat and combustion. We're recycling everything in life, from glass to cans. So what we're basically doing is recycling the heat content of combustion so that you don't have to use electrolysis to make hydrogen. Everybody's working on the fuel cell and the hydrogen, but there's a cost attached to making energy. So like your show is free energy. So how do you get free energy? In our case, we're using thermal chemical splitting. Your engine, the minute that you turn the key, the first explosion when the piston hits and fires with the spark plug, there's over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit in that first explosion. It's like dynamite. The minute you step on the pedal, there's over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. When you're going up a hill, there's over 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So like in the old days when you had the choo-choo train, you saw the steam coming out, but they were using dirty coal or wood. So that it was actually Henry Ford, also the farmer, who said we should be burning alcohol, not coal, dirty coal and wood. Being a farmer, he himself also. But there was a big conflict of interest between Henry Ford, the farmer back then, and Rockefeller, the oil man. So the battle started way back then.
So we have this overview of what the alcohol or aquahol is, which is a combination of ethanol and H2O. On the home page of your website, tectane.com, you have a chart that shows 800% more energy coming from this aquahol than from gasohol. Could you explain how you're driving?
Biggest part of our sort of name to fame, and our credit for this is agriculture. In 1980, the United States Department of Agriculture was doing all the studies on the comparison of sweet sorghum, sugarcane. They also classified aquahol as being 800% more efficient than gasohol. Now, I'm going to clarify that because that's the part that's very, very important for the world to understand. The majority of the world is now starting to understand what gasohol is, the blend of 90% gasoline, 10% ethanol. And it's become mainstream now, even in America, because they passed a lot of new mandates and laws to take out the MTBE, the chemicals that were being blended that replace lead. And now MTBE, methyl tetrabutyl ether, has also been banned and slowly is being replaced by the ethanol. Now that's called gasohol. And gasohol is good. It's an introduction to the ethanol. But when the United States Department of Agriculture feature Bulletin number 771-80, USDA. This is the United States that's saying this. I make this very clear because it's so outstanding that a lot of people get very skeptical and say, well, you know, that's a lot, that's an exaggeration. It's not just Tectane that's saying this. This is the United States Department of Agriculture feature bulletin number 771-80, 1980, under the Carter administration. Now, why is it that aquahol is 800% more efficient than gasohol? Well, let's compare it for a minute. When we look at gasoline, and in our website, you also see the BTU value of burning gasoline versus burning alcohol. We have an illustration on our website and also in our corporate video that shows when you burn gasoline in the laboratory, you get all the fumes. You get the hydrocarbon. This is unburned fuel, hydrocarbon. Then you get the carbon monoxide, the combustion emission result. Then you get NOx, nitrogen oxide, which is the nitrogen in the air that's being oxidized at basically 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit in that combustion. You're taking the air in existence, the nitrogen, but you're oxidizing it with too much heat. So what we're doing is we're cooling the combustion chamber. It's like taking a shower when it's too hot. So now the NOx is going down. Then the incomplete combustion. It's the water that's the most important aspect because we take for granted water, the value of water. If you think back in your chemistry days when you went to school and the teacher said, well, hydrogen is H2O, hydrogen and oxygen, two molecules. Okay, so now when we look at, okay, how do we get the hydrogen? Sure, you can get hydrogen from electrolysis, but electrolysis is not cheap. It's not free. So in our case, what we're doing, again, is using the existing heat of combustion that's there free, and with the proper injection, this is the part that's not so easy, like a doctor giving you a needle in your bloodstream. If he was to give you the wrong needle, he could kill you. Well, if we put the wrong injection needle in the combustion, we could either drown the engine, flood the engine, or create what they call sludge in the oil. So you got to really know what you're doing. You got to have it calculated, you've got to have it tabulated, and you've got to have it metered. And the way we do it that scientifically is with the vacuum of the engine. We have it tapped into the vacuum of the engines. In other words, when you hear that sucker in your engine, in reverse, a patent injection system that injects directly like a doctor with a needle in your bloodstream, but we're injecting directly in the furnace, in the combustion chamber. And we know exactly at what temperature, and it's calibrated to inject, and that's where your efficiency factor is coming. So that when you say 800%, the layman's language I like to say is, for example, if a doctor gives you a needle or if he gives you a pill. So gasohol, I call it like the pill. It's good. But the needle direct into the bloodstream, that's what's 800% more efficient. In gasohol, there is no water. In fact, when you do have water with gasohol, you got a problem. In the winter, for example, when you've got water from the moisture, the engine stalls. So people say, well, how come if your water is good, how come my engine stalls in the winter? Because you've got it in the same tank, in the same delivery system. That doesn't work. Versus, in our case, we're injecting it only at high temperatures. So it's not there when it could stall the engine, like when you're idling or when you're cold and trying to start the engine. We're only injecting at high heat, and we're injecting the proper amount. And this is all part of the efficiency 800%.
Maybe you can explain to us mechanically how you're injecting directly into the combustion chamber. Are you actually creating a new orifice?
Yeah, we actually drill tool and die right into the intake manifold, which is the cover of the combustion chamber. And a lot of people get nervous when we say, well, we're going to drill right into the intake manifold. But actually, it's like if you have a furnace and you drill a hole, if you know how to do it, and we have special die cast that goes into it. Then we have a special grease and oil that retains any of the filings and the metals from falling into the combustion. And even if they did, they'd get blown out because there's so much compression in there from the pistons and everything. So once we do that, then we have a special fitting, just like a doctor giving you a needle. And the needle fits in according to the size of the engine with special nozzles and jets. Jet meaning the orifice of the introduction into that chamber or the furnace. Now, once that nozzle is installed in the intake manifold, now we have a hose that goes to a patented reverse vacuum pump that hooks on to the vacuum of your engine and now is activating our pump so that every time you accelerate, every time you step on the pedal, it is giving the exact amount of vacuum synchronized and metered and tabulated to the injector. Now, from that pump, we have another tank that we normally install in the trunk of the car, towards the side, so it's out of the way on the edge. And this tank really only requires about 5 gallons of water to synchronize with your other tank. So, for example, we're averaging, depending on the size of the engine, about a 20% ratio. This means that if you've got one tank with 10 gallons, you've got another water tank with 2 gallons of water. And that water, the reason that you only need about 20% is because you're only using it at certain temperatures where it's safe, number one, and where it's calibrated to be effective. Now, when is that? The reason the company is called Tectane, because Tectane means octane technology. Now, the word octane, a lot of people are not familiar, even though they gas up every day and they look at the gas pump and it's written regular octane, super octane, so they got 87 octane, the other one says 89 octane, 92 octane, 94 octane. But in the dictionary, the definition of octane is rate of burn. Rate of burn. So what does that mean? So people go and they say, well, I'm going to put regular gasoline. And other people say, well, I got a race car, I'm going to put premium super gasoline. But the rate of burn can also be changed by adding alcohol or by injecting water. So, for example, in the old days, they used to put lead to change the octane, but lead was poisonous, hazardous to our health. And then they switched and they went to the MTBE, which also raises the octane. Because gasoline, when you take it in the crude and you crack it at a refinery, it averages what they call 75 octane straight cut natural gasoline. One of the expressions in the industry is natural gasoline because they haven't added anything yet. There's no chemicals. There's no lead. There's no MTBE. There's no alcohol. So at that point, it's called straight cut, is the industry term. We are able to use that straight cut because we're creating octane with water because we're changing the rate of burn.
Okay, really quick, what are we talking about in a price savings where if you can, of course, 75 octane gas is not available in any pumps that I know of, but if this were to be introduced, that could change. But if we were talking about supply and delivery of 75 octane natural gasoline without having any additional treatment to it or additives, what would the
we have one oil company in the Caribbean, Petrotrin, that has signed the documents on our behalf agreeing that the 75 octane would save about 20% of refinery costs. So in other words, every refinery in the world is making right now 75 octane, and that cost at the refinery, and this is what we're trying to convince the oil industry in general. We're saying to the oil industry, we're saying, hey, guys, we're your best friends, and you don't know it. But so far, we've been able to convince one oil company in the islands next to Venezuela, Trinidad, and they've agreed that you save 20%. Now, it's known in the oil industry. Oil industry themselves and the United States Department of Agriculture, in the same feature bulletin that I mentioned, 771-80, it points out that the biggest benefit of alcohol is that you can burn low octane straight cut. So you'd have a 20% savings right there. Okay, that's the first saving. Next, when you're using the water in the injection and the efficiency now of the oxygenation. Even the oil industry and in America when they signed the Clean Air Act way back in the 70s, everyone agreed. They said, we need reformulated oxygenated gasoline. Everyone agreed that you need oxygen. Oxygen is what is the most important to get good efficiency. So in the old days when they had lead, there was no oxygen in lead, zero. So then they went and they used MTBE. MTBE has got 6 to 8% oxygen maximum, Water, by molecular weight, has got 89% oxygen. So the old song, if you're looking for oxygen, looking in the wrong places. So now, also on the cost of the MTBE or the ethanol. Ethanol is not cheap. Like right now, the ethanol is more expensive than a barrel of oil. So they're adding the ethanol to raise the octane. So water now is going to save you another percentage-wise. We have EPA tests by the strictest EPA labs, which are in California. California showed that our system saves, and they had given us a small little four-cylinder, 25.2% MPG. In other words, 25% more mileage in addition to the 20% that you're saving in the refinery. So we're already up to over 45% in savings, and we're not finished yet. The next step that you're going to save is in the cost of the actual fuel. If we look at the price of oil today compared to 20 years ago, there was a time when oil was $20 a barrel, and now it's like three times the price. There was a time when alcohol was $40 a barrel in Brazil, so that actually alcohol in the form of ethanol, and when I say the word alcohol, for those of you that are listening, you have an alcohol family, what they call butanol, for example, in the lighter, propanol, the rubbing alcohol, ethanol is the drinking alcohol in the bar. And anything that you grow, you can drink. And that's why it's the safest and the cleanest, because it's the one that you can drink. The only one of the alcohol families that you can drink. There's the methanol that can be made from garbage, that can be made from the vapors of coal mines even, and liquefied from methane gas to methanol. You can't drink that. Ethanol is the best and is the cheapest, but it's 25% less BTU than gasoline. So the opponents right away in the oil industry, they're going to say, oh, well, yeah, the alcohol is cheaper, but it's less energy. It's 25% basically less energy. True. But we've already given you back the 25% in mileage. We've already saved 20% of the refinery. And now the next saving is going to come in the production of this ethanol with sweet sorghum. Why? Because right now, everybody in America is pretty much using corn to make ethanol. But it's expensive. It's never been cost-effective. Since the 1980, when Jimmy Carter signed the Alcohol Energy Security Act in 1980, trying to make America independent, and all the studies were done, the wrong choice was made back then. The study by the United States Department of Agriculture back in 1980 showed that corn was not the cost-effective ethanol fuel. It was the sweet sorghum. So the question is, why was the corn chosen? Because an acre of corn, the max you're going to get, even if you got the best fertile soil, depending which state and where you are, is going to be about 350 gallons an acre. An acre of sweet sorghum has already been recorded in America. Louisiana did all the original tests at the University of Louisiana in a study with the United States Department of Agriculture already proved that you can get up to 500 gallons and two crops a year instead of one. Corn will only give you one crop.
So is that 500 gallon per acre including the two crops? Or is
in other words, if you've got two seasons, like it'll grow in 120 days. So in Florida, Louisiana, and Hawaii, for example, you could grow twice a year. Now, some states, naturally, where you got winter and cold climates, you can only grow one crop. But what I'm saying is that corn, no matter where you are, whether it's Florida, Louisiana, or Hawaii, you're still only going to get one crop.
So right away, 500 gallons per acre is one crop.
Per season. In other words, per 120 days.
Mm-hmm.
So right away, there's a huge savings there, number one in the volume, 350 versus 500 gallons. Multiply that by two if you're in the right climate, that's already 1,000 gallons. Next comes the next big saving, the pesticides and the fertilizers. The corn, you must use pesticides and fertilizers. So right away, there's a huge cost there, and then a lot of the environmental critics are would right away remind everyone that pesticides and fertilizers are chemicals, so you're also poisoning the earth. So you're saying, well, this is good on one side, but you're using the bad stuff to make it happen, so that's not really eco-friendly. versus the sweet sorghum has been proven over and over, and we've just been, even here in Canada with the weather that everyone doubted, we've now proven it 4 years consecutively without fertilizers or pesticides. Cornell University from New York testified to it, and you saw that in our video.
Yeah.
So now you've got the savings, number one, of the yield per acre. You've got the savings of no pesticides and fertilizers. Then you've got another big plus. The sweet sorghum has got fiber bamboo type stock on the outside, and it's filled with sucrose on the inside, and it's got a beautiful grained flower top. So the byproducts make it outstanding in the sense of cost effective, because the actual fiber is really more valuable than the sucrose inside. Okay, so you got 500 gallons in that acre. That's great. You're already way ahead of the corn and even the other alternatives like switchgrass, where there's a movement going on with switchgrass, which is fiber. But switchgrass, for example, will only give you about 3 tons of fiber per acre versus the sweet sorghum will give you 5 tons of fiber per acre in addition to the 500 gallons per acre, and a big bonus flour grain top that can be used for bread, cereal, or animal feed. So when you tabulate all of that, it is absolutely cheaper than a barrel of oil and the most cost-effective. So that you're saving, at the end of the day, with everything, you're way over 60 to 70%. If you tabulate all of it.
Cheaper than oil.
Absolutely. There's no contest anymore. Now, originally when Henry Ford had his Model T, and he actually was the pioneer of the alcohol. He wanted to do water, but he didn't understand the science back then. He thought he was making steam, because there was the steam train from coal and from the wood. So he figured, well, and he took a pickle jar in his first Model T prototype to try to make alcohol, and he had a pickle jar with water, and then he was sucking in too much water. He didn't have the injection pump like we have, but he had the right idea, but he abandoned it on the side because he said, well, I can't figure out how to do this, and then there was opposition. The oil was so cheap back then, and Rockefeller was giving him a hard time, and so he sort of let go by the wayside. Who actually continued the development was Rolls-Royce and TRW. TRW was one of the biggest companies in the world that used to manufacture aeronautical mechanical valves. So they had all the research for when valves burn. I noticed in some of the critics of your show that had mentioned that the water injection system had hurt some of the valves and different things like that. Well, actually, what they didn't realize is that there were 68 companies that competed and came out after TRW and Rolls-Royce introduced the first real, true water injection system. And some of the systems that were made that were copies were not injecting the right amount. They did cause harm, and they weren't using inhibitors. Gasoline has all types of inhibitors to make it behave properly. We do the same thing. In the water, we have special inhibitors that lubricate the engine and actually makes the engine last longer. There's tests by the Society of Automotive Engineers that was done way back when I was born, 1946. And in 1946, an SAE test paper 215 and 216, for those of the people that are not familiar with who SAE is, every oil can in the world has got an SAE stamp, 30 weight, 40 weight. They are the authority in the world of anything to do with oil. So that they themselves in 1946 proclaimed that if you were to use alcohol and water, you would save 40% of oil. But way back then, I was just a baby. I was in a crib when they said it. So I had nothing to do with it back then. And that was their own report. Then later on, the EPA, as I mentioned, we did that in California. Then the United States Department of Agriculture is the one that took 800%. So there's huge, 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 huge benefits to this. It's so revolutionary, it's amazing. And now probably the next question is, well, what happened?
Well, what happened? Actually, another question I do want to get to is,
well, amazingly, by trade, I'm a film producer, by the way. And mm-hmm. I was doing a film in America in 1976 for the Bicentennial of America, a celebration of America inventors, starting with Thomas Edison and electricity and Alexander Graham Bell. And I had to do a lot of research on the great inventions of America that really made America. And lo and behold, in the course of my research and looking at all the great inventions, I met the actual original inventor, engineer, aeronautical mechanical engineer, Norman Wagg, who had worked with Rolls-Royce and TRW. And they had made this. And when I was doing the film, I said, my God, when I heard all of what I just said to you, I said to the engineer, I said, what happened? I said, this is amazing. How come they didn't adapt it? And he said, well, it started back with Ford and Rockefeller, and there was a big battle then. And Rockefeller said, you better not compete with me. Be satisfied. Just make cars. Don't get into the alcohol ethanol business. And then he says, they used it on the fighter planes, on the Mustang and the Thunderbolts, and many air pilots have testified on national TV way back that it helped win the air war. This was the original booster, like after you had the turbo booster, then you had the nitro and all of it. But this was the original because it gives you also more horsepower, about 15% more horsepower even now. So after the war, TRW made this available to all the car companies. They could have used it. It was available way back then, 1946, when the Society of Automotive Engineers put the report. You never in the first place. From 1946, the world never needed lead, and there's no excuse. This is my biggest beef. Now, it took 30 years to get the lead out of gasoline, and most people don't know that it was actually Mothers Against Lead that got the lead out of gasoline. Some of the mothers in Riverside, California, the babies were getting sick from the fumes, the hazards of burning gasoline with lead. This Riverside is like in the bottom of the bowl of California. And they went to see the doctors, and the doctors said, well, the baby, that's the fumes from lead. And they went to EPA America, and they said, hey, you're poisoning my baby. And EPA said, well, these are hazards of life. Pollution is a hazard of life. And they said, oh, really? They organized and formed and sued America and got the lead out. Most people don't know. That's why now you got unleaded gasoline. But they made the next mistake. They put MTBE, methyl tetrabutyl ether, four chemicals, which now are being banned and outlawed the same as lead after all these years, for basically the same reasons. And all the time, the water was ignored, avoided, and even refuted by many of the special interest groups. Now, it's like the cigarette companies when people say, they ask me all the time, why? And I always answer the classic example, the cigarette. For what? Now, finally, the laws have passed. You're not allowed to smoke and this. But look at the battle, how long it took for cigarettes to get to where it is today. And we did a study back in California because our company started in Florida in 1979. After I did the film, and I met this, I went to the city of Hollywood, and I said to the police department, listen, this is a very, very touchy situation, and I'd like to give a demonstration on television, ABC, NBC, CBS, all the major networks, and the television and newspaper. I want to put on a police car free of charge. I want to put on Pepsi Cola, a big name, and Marriott Hotel. Three big, reputable, big, and all free on the condition that you testify, because nobody's going to believe this, and for the sake of safety and protection. So the police chief testified on May 9th of 1979. This is on a big 440 Hemi engine, double the gas mileage. Pepsi on a truck testified at 30% saving, and Marriott Hotel on a station wagon testified to a 40% increase. Now, I figured with that and the news, ABC, NBC, the Miami Herald, the Hollywood, the Fort Lauderdale News, oh, my God, for sure, everybody was going to jump on this. No, they didn't touch it like a hot potato. Like the cigarette companies are not closing their door. Have you seen any cigarette companies say, okay, guys, we know it's bad, and okay, we're going to close the doors, and we're not going to sell cigarettes anymore. They're going to China. They're going to other places around the world to sell the cigarettes. So that this is free trade, what they call. But there's consequences.
Yeah, let me jump in here really quick. We are near the bottom of the hour, and once a month we have a show by Zenya Rice about what we can do to reduce our footprint on the planet. We give her about 3 minutes, if we could interject that just for a little bit. Go ahead, Zinya.
Hi, greetings. So today my report is good news that finally the president said climate change in his State of the Union speech. However, he announced nothing to stop the pollution that is fueling our planet. Scientists are telling us loud and clear that if we don't act now to cut greenhouse gas emissions, the window of opportunity will soon close forever and the outcome will be disastrous. Allowing temperatures to rise more than another 2 degrees Fahrenheit threatens to trigger the irreversible melting of the Greenland ice sheet, a 20-foot rise in sea level, and the extinction of species. So the only chance to avert such horrible outcomes is to act now and to stabilize the world's climate demands. We've got to get the new Congress to do it now by passing urgent, needed legislation that will cut the current levels of U.S. global warming by 25%. The Natural Resources Defense Council, or NRDC, has been fighting in Congress for our environment. And the day before the president's speech, 10 of the most influential companies in the world joined the NRDC and the Union of Concerned Scientists, the Sierra Club, U.S. Public Interest Research Group, and other leading environmental groups to call on Congress for a median and mandatory approach to pass tough global warming legislation now. Corporate America sees the writing on the wall, and the leadership of a new Congress has vowed to tackle the problem. A number of American companies addressing climate change has risen notably since 2003. More than 60 corporations with net revenues of roughly $1.5 trillion have voluntarily set reduction targets for their greenhouse gas emissions, and that number is growing. It's going to take overwhelming public support to pass the kind of bold legislation that our planet so desperately needs. So make your voice heard. Ask your senators and representatives to cut global warming pollution by co-sponsoring the Safe Climate Act. Safe Climate Act. Ask them to open the way for alternative clean, green energy technologies. They're available now for electricity and operating vehicles. Duke Energy and DuPont have plans to grow produce and market the next generation of biofuels. There's not enough land in the world to grow corn and soybeans to create ethanol and other fuels. Growing just to create fuel takes away our fuel supply from people, as well as the destruction of natural habitat. Plus, it takes lots of energy to grow and produce food just and causing pollution. And because of the absence of federal action on global warming pollution and the threat it represents to the economy and environment, California set its own standards and limits on emission pollution from cars. 10 other states have adopted California standards, and several others are considering adopting the Clean Cars Campaign. Check this out, www.cleancarscampaign.org. Learn more about what you can do to make a difference of our footprint on the planet. Some websites to look at are the NRDC, which is Natural Resources Defense Council, nrdc.org, and www.climatechange.com, and www.grist.org, G-R-I-S-T.org. And the Energy Star, www.energystar.com, you can buy energy-conserving products. So talk to your friends and family and encourage each other to conserve energy by investigating into alternative energy sources like solar, wind, and green building, and plant trees and gardens. February is Water Conservation Month, so learn about the water situation in your area. Last Sunday, the Arizona Republic newspaper featured a full-page article about creating a powerful energy alliance, envisionizing the formation of a North American energy community to establish common energy policies of the three great nations of the United States, Canada, and Mexico to have a workable strategy that deals directly with our fundamental geopolitical dilemma: how to grow our economy while reducing our dependence on imported energy. Hopefully this will develop. Many blessings, Jenya.
Thank you. Okay, Nino, back to you. Jenya brought up an interesting point that I imagine you have some response to, and that is one of the rejoinders for this whole idea of growing our fuel is that it actually competes with food that we need. If we're growing our fuel, then the food prices go up and become somewhat of a premium. How does sweet sorghum fit into that equation?
Well, sweet sorghum is the answer to that problem, because corn is so in demand as a food substance in almost everything you buy that it never should have been chosen in the first place. What I mentioned to you about when the Jimmy Carter administration did the comparison, no one suggested back then that you go with corn. It was the wrong way to go. It was like the mistake, and it's got to be corrected. Sweet sorghum is not a food substance. We're using it for animal feed, and they were using it more for bread in Africa, things of that nature, but it wasn't a main crop food in that sense. Sorghum was more for animals. But in the case of the sweet sorghum, it's ideal for the alcohol because the sucrose that's inside is all sugars that can be fermented and distilled into alcohol rather than used for food.
When in the video that I watched that you produced, the short, the 30-minute one that's basically a shortened version of what will be a full feature-length film going into the movie theaters by Nicholas Klein,
right?
Yeah, very well done. And they're talking about the multiple products that you get from sweet sorghum. One is ethanol, but you can use it for building materials in place of wood. The fibers can be used for artificial wood. You can use it for pulp for paper making, and Cascade Paper has been doing that since 2003. You can use it, the tops, for feed for both human and animals. And there's all these basically products coming from sweet sorghum. It seems like just the dream product. Why has it not been catching on?
Well, as the producer, Nicholas Klein, pointed out when he did the study and met a lot of the farmers in Cornell University, he was amazed to find out that corn had been chosen, and even to use corn, it had to be subsidized for the last 30 years. Corn to alcohol was getting 53 cents a gallon. So right there, the taxpayers were losing because it was never cost effective, so it had to be subsidized. It should never have been chosen. Now, a lot of the viewpoints on that is that special interest groups have monopolies more or less in corn, use their special interest advantages to promote the corn. So the biggest concern I have in looking at the industry over 30 years, and I'm 60 years old, 30 years in this industry, in an energy alternative, we're not prejudiced in the sense of whether it's gasoline or whether it's ethanol. To us, what's the most important is the water, what I mentioned to you, and that's why the film is titled The Water Solution, just free energy, as your show, in the sense that we can clean up the act of the gasoline people, because the reality of all of this that I keep saying is to build enough ethanol plants, you don't have enough time. What she just said about the climate change and how serious it is, and everybody came here to Montreal to sign the treaty last year. And everyone acknowledged that 6% reduction is not. So that the major problem is that even if tomorrow a law was passed, and that's what would have to be done, before you enough ethanol plants all across America to make America independent, you're talking easy a decade away. And some scientists say you don't have that time, versus we're saying inject oxygen right now, today. It because the catalytic converter, as the film illustrates, is creating CO2. So the first thing that should be done is that just like lead got outlawed, the catalytic converter that's on every car in America by law should be outlawed. Because when the catalytic converter was chosen, there was no crisis with CO2. The only three emissions that were mandated by law, by EPA of America, was the HC, hydrocarbon, unburned fuel, carbon monoxide, CO, and NOx, those three. Then there was a crisis that evolved with CO2. So the catalytic converter, what it does is it burns the other emission, but it creates the CO2. So at one time in history, it was a good guy, and now it's a bad guy. So we're saying, get rid of the catalytic converter, inject some oxygen right now. Number one, that's good news to the car companies because the catalytic converter is very expensive. The platinum that's in there is about 10 times more expensive than our conversion injector. So every industry hates to spend money. But when you say to them, you're going to save 10 times, then they should be happy. The oil industry, we say, listen, guys, you're not going to have to make high octane. You're going to save money. Because the only way you convince these people is you've got to be able to save them money. And we're all like that. We shop at Walmart because we save money.
It's saving everyone money from the producers to the consumers. Is that correct?
That's right. And our biggest concern now, and we're working on a campaign, is education, like your show, to make people realize what's available right away. You need oxygen.
Well, let's talk about this injecting oxygen via water. How much does it cost? Is it available and where and how? And how many units have been tested? And what kind of data has been collected across the various makes and models of vehicles that have run this? And how are you able to get this 50% improvement in lifetime data that you report in this movie?
Okay, here is the biggest concerns that we have as a company. We have all the documentation, certification, more than anybody could ever ask for, starting with the Society of Automotive Engineers, which is probably the most authoritative society in the world. What I mentioned before, every oil can is only got one seal, SAE. Then the United States government. Then EPA of the United States government. Then the police department, Pepsi-Cola, Marriott, reputable, credible people. But the United States Air Force used it during the Second War. And then over 100,000 sophisticated race cars used it for years. It was the booster before the nitro and the other turbocharged systems came. So what happened is we were the first pretty much to promote the commercial application with the police department, Pepsi. And in Florida back in 1979, 1980, we sold over 10,000 units. And we ironically at Quaker State as a distributor in Florida, and we installed 10,000 units. Now, the biggest problem that we have experienced, and it started there, we manufactured 5,000 units, and they were defective. Now, till this day, we cannot prove that they were cost-effective or labor or sabotage or strictly a problem somewhere along the line, but it really hurt the company.
Mm-hmm.
So then what happened is we realized that there's a lot of foul play in this industry. And so we moved and we went to Southeast Asia. Our strongest right now advancement, ironically, is China, India, the Philippines, and Japan. Now, all of the studies lately have shown that it's the American government that is refusing to sign the Kyoto Protocol. And yet it's the American government that's being run by an oil industry. So, I mean, there should be suspect there. When I did the demonstration in Florida, Jeb Bush was Secretary Treasurer of Florida. His family, George Bush Sr., was running America, and everybody knew what we did with the police department, Pepsi. There's no excuse saying that it was not in the news. And yet, no one from the Bush administration and Jeb Bush, I have letters signed by him to his father, and no one came and said, okay, let's promote, let's develop, let's do this. So that I would suggest that people of America become very suspicious of an oil administration. I would put Jimmy Carter back in office tomorrow in the sense of a farmer president that signed the Alcohol Energy Security Act. And in his days, the Congress and the Senate, everyone agreed that the word security should be part of the act. So it was called the Alcohol Energy Security for National Security of America. And the minute that Jimmy Carter was replaced by the actor Reagan, it was dismantled. And then it got worse and worse and worse to where we are today, and America still refusing. And yet every other country in the world has agreed. Isn't this suspicious?
Yeah, it's quite ironic and suspicious.
And we can't deal with American car companies. I've been to General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler 30 years ago. Nobody was interested. And unless you got the car companies that work with you for the specifications of the computer, because they're all coded today. So for us to be able to do what needs to be done today, back in the old days with the police department, there were carburetors. We could make all the adjustments manually. Today, everything is computer control with code. And in the video, you'll notice when we did the corporate video, we called Ford to give us permission to change the code, and they wouldn't give it to us. So until the car companies cooperate and give us the code, then there's something wrong, and it's got to be addressed. And this is our biggest concern.
That is being done in other countries. The manufacturers are working with you?
In China, the car companies, and in India, and in some of the other countries, Japan is coming to meet with us this month. Now, there's a lesson there for America. Japan is beating America. Toyota has got the hybrid. I'm driving a tri-bred instead of a hybrid, and Toyota's coming to see me because I said, instead of having the engine half electric and half gasoline, mine is electric, alcohol, and water. So it's a tri-bred. This is a green, true, 100% green vehicle, the vehicle of the future. Now, the car companies in America, they're not paying attention, and they're going to get beat so bad, they're already getting beat by the Japanese, and they better wake up, because what does it take to make them realize that everything is backfiring on them? I mean, General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler used to be the kingpins, the major three, and now they've fallen by the wayside.
Let's talk just practical dollars and cents. If I wanted to put one of these on my car and the motor vehicle company was compliant, they were willing to give the necessary codes to make it interface properly, how much would it cost and what kind of fuels could I run in that vehicle?
OEM, original equipment manufacturer, costs you $50. OEM, original equipment manufacturer. The catalytic converter is about $300 cost, manufacturing cost. And it retails for about $800 and more. This is a very inexpensive situation here. So there's no excuse saying, well, it costs more, it costs this. It's all to win on both sides.
What about the water freezing in cold climates?
Just like in your windshield washer in the winter, what you have in there is half water and half alcohol. The green stuff that you see is the glycerine to prevent the paint from fading, because alcohol would dry the paint and stain your paint, so they have to put that inhibitor. But
so
in 50%. The actual water going in the engine, you don't need that glycerine.
How low of a temperature could that withstand without freezing? 50-50 combination water
50
ethanol?
50 below zero. Just like now, when you look at your windshield washer and it's written right on good 40 below, 50 below, alcohol, that's the greatest benefit of the alcohol, never free.
And what would that do to the mixture nozzles? Are they going to, do you have to change some settings so they know that it's 50-50 coming in rather than 100% water?
Well, this is where the computer and the oxygen sensors and the fuel flow sensors, this is where we need the car companies to work with us. Your question a minute ago, if you wanted to buy one tomorrow, without the car companies cooperating and saying and giving us permission to change the codes, we're crippled. And that's what's got to change. Then the other big benefit that we have, right now if you want what they call E85 cars, in other words 85% ethanol, 15% gasoline, you have to buy a new car. If you want a hybrid, you have to buy a new car. Whatever you want, whether it's a fuel cell, you got to buy a new one. We're about the only ones around that are saying, no, we can take your car in 2 hours and we'll convert it, and we can convert it where it can run on the ethanol. Right away, the engineer says that's not possible because the ethanol will dry the components, especially the gaskets in the engine, which is true. Alcohol is a solvent, so it's going to dry and affect the materials and the components of the engine. But what they neglect to remember is that there's inhibitors to control that, that you put in the water, and it will lubricate and coat and protect the internal combustion parts as well as lubricate and make the engine last longer. The original test done by the Society of Automotive Engineers that mentioned that you could save up to 40% also testified and confirmed that the engine will last up to 50% longer because you're cleaning it and you're lubricating it. Now, originally when that study came out, according to the original engineers when I did my film, they said, well, the oil people weren't happy because they heard they're going to save and they're going to lose 40% of their profits, and the idea that the engines are going to last 50% longer. They had two major industries that weren't happy about losing profit. So the bottom line is always money.
But you're saying that they're actually going to save money, and their bottom line is going to improve using this technology.
When they listen, exactly.
Yeah.
When they actually listen, like PetroTrend did, the oil company, and the Chinese did, and now India is building cars with us. We're actually doing our own specifications with them. See, we're starting from scratch with the right people. And what I think is going to happen, especially because we're doing some big films in Hollywood with some of the big celebrities, and what's going to happen is that the Americans are going to be a little bit upset when they find out that here's American technology that is in China and India and other parts of the world because we haven't signed the Kyoto Protocol and because we're being run by an oil government. So there are going to be a lot of people that are going to be upset because the films are going to come out, and Arnold, Mr. Terminator, has already told the car companies, if you don't get 25% better mileage, hasta la vista. So he's flexing his muscles.
Yeah.
And this is what we need, that type of thing. And then there's a lot of big-name celebrities that have jumped on the bandwagon on the eco-associations that are that we're involved with, so that there's going to be a sort of a revolution coming because the little video that you saw, sooner or later, there's going to be a question to Jeb Bush and George Bush Sr. How come when this was on ABC, NBC, and the mileage was doubled by the police department and Pepsi and Marriott, why is it that you guys didn't do anything about this?
Mm-hmm.
What is your excuse 30 years ago? And I was on the Larry King radio show in Miami Beach before he was on the Larry King CNN. He was on Miami Beach, and after I did the police department, I was on the Larry King radio show in Miami Beach. And now one of the things we want to do is sit down and go and say, what happened to you, Nino, 30 years ago since then?
Yeah.
Well, I've been around the world, and ironically, I had to end up with China and India and the Philippines and these developing countries and the United Nations and the World Bank.
We are at the end of the show. We need to wrap her up. I do appreciate you coming on. It's been fascinating. And I wish you the best. When is your show going to come out?
Well, we're trying to schedule for the summer.
Okay. And we can go to techdane.com or .org, T-E-C-T-A-N-E. This has been Sterling Allen with Free Energy Now. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Sterling.